Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.
Hey there, this is Tom from the future. I'm whispering because time travel requires whispering. I don't know if you've listened to the newest episodes in order to find this out, but with the holidays here, there is a brand new thing that Patreon is doing where you can gift subs, which is really cool because that means a few different things. First of all, if you know somebody else who enjoys this show, you can get them a sub to whatever tier you want for whatever amount of time. So if you look at certain rewards and you think it would be really cool to get them those rewards, or just being part of the community, or even just getting ad-free episodes, that's something you can give this holiday season. Also, it means that if you've been wanting to sign up for the Patreon and you haven't been able to, and you want to ask for it as a gift from somebody else, then that can work as well. So, both of those things are options. All that you have to do is go to Patreon, log in, or create an account. You can just create a free account. You don't have to sign up with anybody, anyone's Patreon. And then you go to the Patreon page for this show, and you choose to gift a thing. You go through all the little options, and you send them a gift. It's really simple. It would be super helpful to us, and it's a fun thing to give. So hope you consider that, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday. All right, let's get back to the show.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning.
All right, welcome back to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. This is your host, Tom, or Robots. I rarely start the show like this, but if you're new, you might want to know who I am. And we are talking this week about episode 6 of season 2 of The Rings of Power, and all of the things that stood out to me. This is my reaction and predictions for what's going to come. Now, before I get into it, I just want to address something. You'll probably have noticed that this episode is coming out early. Normally, I drop it on Mondays for everybody and Sundays for patrons, but this episode just aired, and I wanted to get this out as soon as possible for everyone. So be aware, you're getting an early episode this week, but the bonus episode will still go up for patrons on Sunday. So you're just kind of moving it ahead a little bit in order to be part of the conversation a little bit sooner. So also, spoilers, if you haven't watched this episode yet, go watch the episode and then come back and join me for this discussion. And this episode, it's to me, this is all about Elendil. He's so good. Every scene that he is in, he just... I don't know. Is it choose the scenery? Is that the phrase that's used in Hollywood? I don't even know what that means. He's so good. So good. And Sauron also, of course, so good. But we have to start out at the beginning of this episode with this tiny little section we get with Arondir, and he's kicking orc butt. This is one of the most Legolas scenes in this entire show, and we know that they're pulling a lot in this show from the Peter Jackson films, and specifically they have certain character archetypes that seem to be reoccurring, and that happens a little bit in Tolkien, but there's very much more of it happening here than what normally happens in Tolkien, I think you could probably say. So for example, Arondir is clearly the Legolas stand-in. He's a Sylvan elf. He's somebody who grew up in nature, in Middle Earth. He's earthy, but he's also super coordinated.
he's absolutely a terror with a bow. And of course, we get these scenes with the orcs where he kills the one behind him without looking. It's like it's the Middle Earth equivalent of walking out of the explosion without looking at it. Right. It's such a cool scene. And then at the end, he finds what appears to be a map. And I think this is foreshadowing that map is going to be useful in catching up with the orc army and bringing everything together at the end. I think this big siege that we're getting to in this episode is going to be this culmination point. And I've debated it a little bit. Are we going to see the second to last episode, episode 7 for this season, being a bridge to a absolutely amazing, terrible battle in season or in episode 8? Or are we getting the big battle where all of these groups come together? And by all of these groups, I mean, you have the orcs, you have the elves defending the city. You also, I think we're leading up to this point where we have the Numenoreans again coming back to Middle Earth, because it happens towards the end of the first season. It's going to happen again here, I think, because as I've been predicting, we're going to have a situation where the Numenoreans show up. Our Pharazôn is going to have to try to save face. And we're going to get into that toward the end of this episode recap. But we're going to have Numenoreans again returning to Middle Earth. They're going to be part of this conflict. They're going to hold off the orcs from doing more damage than they possibly will end up doing, although they're going to do a lot. And then you are going to have a situation with Sauron seeing where things are going and seeing the opportunity to further influence our Pharazôn, and then deciding to surrender. And it's going to be this weird twist for people who don't understand what's going on in the story, I think. And they'll make it make sense. I also think that where we're going with Arondir and notice we didn't see Isildur or any of these other people that they're traveling with. But I think we're going to have the Ents showing back up as well. So we'll have a sort of a Battle of Five Armies kind of situation, although I'm not sure there will be five armies. You will have the Uruks and the Elves, clearly, because we already have the beginning of that in this episode. But I think we're also going to end up, oh, you know what? We will have five armies. We'll have the Ents showing up as well, and then the Numenoreans showing up, and the Dwarves as well. And so we're going to end up, this seems like a crazy prediction for something that's going to happen over just the next two episodes, but I think maybe that's where this is going. So, I didn't even realize it when I hit the record button, that this is where I was going to go at the beginning of this conversation. But I think that's where we're going. We're going to have a Battle of Five Armies kind of situation. And it's going to be epic, and I'm excited for that. I hope they work in the Ents in a way that makes sense. What I don't think we're going to have is some sort of quick wrap up to the whole rune situation with let's just call him Gandalf. Can we all agree? I know we've been debating this for a little bit now, and I've put out all the evidence on previous episodes, and people have pushed back and said, well, I think they still could make a case for him being a blue wizard or something else. No, he's Gandalf. We're going to get to that as well. So lots of stuff to cover in this episode, and I'm jumping all over the place already because I'm all excited. But here, let's transition into the actual start of the episode. Here we go. All right, so the first scene we get after the Arondir scene, we're back in Eregion. I can't pronounce it the way they pronounce it. And Celebrimbor is failing. He's having a hard time. He's really stressed out. He's clearly being influenced by Sauron, and his personality is taking a hit. He keeps on having his pride played to, and the importance of these rings being reinforced to him. And he's just not in a good spot. He's forgetting people's names. He's scattered in his mind. And I think this is the influence of Sauron on him. Sauron is clearly in his mind. And we see this in the situation later on where he's getting suspicious. He's ready to just leave. And then all of a sudden he walks out because he thinks the town is under siege, which it is. And Sauron changes his perspective. Everything looks fine. In fact, it goes from being a dark night to the middle of the day, and there are children playing and people running around. But notice in the situation, everybody he sees outside, all of these imaginary elves that Sauron is manipulating his mind to see, they're all crafting and artisans. They're all making things. And I'm sure that's pretty common in a city like this full of these elves who clearly have a lot of free time, I guess. But he's a craftsman. And so Sauron is feeding into the things that would make him happy. He walks outside and people are making things. And that's the world that Celebrimbor wants to be a part of. This world where people are creating and making things, and he's playing that against him. He's not just giving him a fake view of the way the world looks outside his door. He's actually playing on his motivations and the way he wants the world to feel. This is deep manipulation. This is a stand-in for what happens when people manipulate you, when they gaslight you, when they continue to lie to you about things, when they are changing your perspective on the world in order to get you to act in certain ways. And that's what we've been seeing throughout this entire season so far, is Celebrimbor being manipulated. And the height of this comes when Sauron hands him Feanor's hammer. And I called this out on the last season. You can go back and listen to some of the bonus episodes on Patreon, but I called this out and I was like, there is a reason why Elrond is noticing Feanor's hammer when he goes to visit him in the first season. It's not just because this is a little lore nugget, like a little Easter egg for those of us who know. And that's his grandfather. Feanor was the guy who made the Silmarils. He started a lot of the problems that happened in Middle Earth and why Morgoth was fighting against the elves in order to keep them from getting the Silmarils and all of that stuff. And really, it's the other way around. Morgoth takes the Silmarils and then the elves are trying to fight him to get them back. And of course, that's the story of the first age of the world. But that's neither here nor there for this, because Celebrimbor has his pride and it is being manipulated. He sees the things that his grandfather was able to create and he wants to be a great creator. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be successful and wanting to be good at something. The problem occurs when those wants are twisted inward and manipulated, or are focused primarily on yourself and your own successes and your own pride instead of being focused outward and trying to make the world a better place in order to help other people and those kinds of things. This is a theme that Tolkien was very aware of. The group mentality in almost every situation where you see a good guy in the lore, they are community focused. They are focused outward. They are focused on being a part of a greater whole, a group of other people, and doing things that benefit more than just themselves. The characters who tend to be evil are very focused on themselves and their own ascent to power and control and those kinds of things. Celebrimbor can go either way. Anybody can go either way. Power itself and determination and drive are not necessarily negative or positive things. It depends what you do with them. They are tools, just like a hammer. You can use a hammer to make a beautiful piece of art that people can enjoy, or you can make a hammer to make a sword in order to make yourself more powerful. It's how you use it. That's the nature of power. And Sauron understands this, and he is manipulating Celebrimbor by using the instincts in his own being and manipulating that against him in order to isolate him from the other people around him. And you see this happen in the dialogue. On the one hand, he plays up the importance of what they're doing and how they're doing it for everyone else and how they're going to save Middle Earth by making these rings. And on the flip side is totally playing that against Celebrimbor's pride. And he eats it up. It's not like he doesn't push back. And I think that's part of what I like about these scenes. Celebrimbor is suspicious and becomes more and more suspicious. It's the sort of thing that happens if you've ever been in a manipulative situation before. I used to work for a very narcissistic boss, and he would do this kind of thing to everybody. It was the kind of situation where he was very micromanaging of, if that's even a word, of everybody underneath him. And one week he would tell you, okay, well, this is what you need to do. And then you would do it. And the next week he would go, why did you do that? Who told you to do that? Because it didn't turn out the way he wanted it to turn out. Not because you didn't follow his instructions. He would play these kinds of games with everybody because he constantly was reinventing his and our perspective of what reality was in order to maintain control. And it is something I still suffer from today. When I see people do this, it's something that kind of triggers like a PTSD in me. Now, I enjoy it when Sauron does it because it's fiction, right? But in the real world, especially when I see like important, powerful people do this, it really triggers me. So part of what I'm trying to say here is this is written in a way where it actually works. And I know there are haters, there are people who try to nitpick every little situation, every little bit of acting, every little bit of writing. But one of the things that I think truly, genuinely works about the Rings of Power is Sauron and his ability to get in people's heads. And it's not just hand wavy magic. Sure, we've got a little bit of that. You know, well, he does this thing where he concentrates and all of a sudden Celebrimbor sees the world differently when he walks outside and the city's not being attacked. That's a little hand wavy. It's also a little hand wavy that the elves, they had some people out there who were attacked. And then Sauron says, OK, don't tell anyone about this. Bury the body. You would assume in a city that large, you would have multiple people on the outskirts who are in the forests, working in the fields nearby, those kinds of things, who would be reporting a gigantic orc army marching on the city. Sure, that's a little hand wavy. Got it. But the parts that aren't are things like the way the characters are dealing with each other and these relationships. We can talk about Durin and Durin's father and Disa. Very similar kinds of stuff because Durin's father is being manipulated by the ring. And it's playing, again, his pride against him. In fact, that may be one of the predominant themes of this season, now that I think about it. You have the dwarves dealing with that. You have Celebrimbor dealing with that. You had Galadriel dealing with that, and she's starting to come out of it. In fact, in this episode, she starts to really figure out what's going on, which I think is pretty cool. You have Adar and the manipulation of Adar to get this army here to attack the elves, and again, playing his pride against him. He feels responsible. He's the father of these people. And he also is in deep, deep fear of what Sauron will do to him if he doesn't stop him. He's already played his hand. He thought he had Sauron where he needed him and tried to kill him. And it didn't work. And so now he is out of fear trying to help the people that are his people, these orcs. But at the same time, he needs to save face and he needs to save himself from what's going on with Sauron. And then on top of that, you have the situation in Numenor with Ar-Pharazôn. And Ar-Pharazôn is, it's the same kind of thing. It's an ascent to power. It's playing on his pride. And Sauron isn't the one doing this yet. This is something that has been stewing and festering in Numenor for a long time, according to the lore. But in this situation, it's an ascent to power and a focus on the self rather than on what's best for everyone. And of course, the person who wants to claim that power will always say that having or getting the power for themselves is what's going to be better for everyone else. Give me all of this and I will make your lives better. So anyway, I've rambled on about this long enough. Let's go through some of the other scenes because I definitely am jumping around, but I'm excited and that's part of why I'm a little bit scattered right now. We have the situation with Adar and Galadriel and he's trying to get information out of her. And I don't have a whole lot to say about that scene, although there is a certain, the more I see Adar on the screen, the more he genuinely feels like a real kind of character. He's not a character that exists in the lore. He was somebody who was made up for this show. But this idea of somebody who is, he's got kind of a foot in both worlds. He clearly was an elf. He understands the elves. He understands how to communicate with Galadriel. And the way this actor and the previous actor, it's been two different actors, have portrayed him has been very good. He's been very thoughtful in his movements. He's not quick to react. He is somebody who is clearly intelligent and yet is still being manipulated and has been manipulated. And the details that they have said about the way Sauron gets in their minds, and he has a line where he says, he not only sees you like who you are now, but also who you want to be. And that's the thing he plays against you, which, again, we're seeing over and over and over again. And it's done so well. So we've got that situation with Galadriel, and then it moves on to our Farazan and Elendil at the court. This scene is giving me a lot of ancient Rome, kind of the Forum kind of qualities. But here's my perspective on this. Numenor was sort of an Atlantis story for Tolkien. And if you were to take the way that the ancient Greeks or the ancient Romans would have considered Atlantis to be and how it would look and how it would function, you get Numenor. They're doing a lot right here because it feels kind of Greek, feels kind of Roman, feels very Mediterranean, but it also still feels very much like its own thing. You've got aspects of this in the armor and the columns, but yet they're all tweaked a little bit differently. Like if you notice, if you look at the columns, they're not circular, they're hexagonal. There's a little bit of a tweak on that kind of Greek, Greco-Roman kind of thing. You also have a lot of the coloring of the stones and things like that look like kind of these Mediterranean light colored stones. There's some really cool details going on there. But what's most interesting to me in this scene is Elendil and how his character is being portrayed. First of all, the acting is great. But secondly, he is somebody who is faithful. And not only is he faithful to the Valar, but he is a man of principle. He is somebody who stands up for what is right and for what is true, and he doesn't back down. He knows that Farazan should not have the crown. He knows that the things that Farazan is doing in order to gain power are destructive, are dividing Numenor. His messaging is division. It is not unity. And Elendil knows why that's a problem. It's not just that he believes and understands that Muriel should be the real ruler and all of that. It's that he's also one of the faithful. He knows that they are a people called to a higher cause, and that higher cause is to be in unity with the world around them, is to be in unity with the Valar and with the elves, and to try to seek to do what is right and what is good for the world. And that is in stark contrast to the acquisition of power and control over the world. This is another one of those Tolkien themes. Control over the world is what the villains do. It's why Saruman raised Isengard and started burning the forest of Fangorn, was in order to create power and control over that environment. Same kind of thing happens here. Elendil knows. And maybe even, he doesn't allude to it at all in any of the conversations here, but maybe even fears for the future of Numenor beyond just the division that is being sown by Farazan among the people. But he also, I think, has a sense, and he and Muriel and the priestly line have a sense that if the Numenoreans truly do turn their back on the Valar, then destruction will happen. We saw those scenes that Muriel had in the first season of the waves crashing over the island. I think Elendil's also somebody who understands the importance of doing this on an existential level. And so he doesn't back down. He knows that he needs to stand up for what is right. He's also a character who has lost a son and another friend of the family who was like a son to him. And I don't know about any of you, if you've watched Game of Thrones, which most people have at this point, I'm getting a very Ned Stark kind of quality going on here with Elendil. And it's great. I'm here for it because he is the one guy who's standing up for the truth and he's being punished for it. Well, he's not the only one, but he is the main person. He's the person that we're supposed to be following here who stands up for the truth. The world would be a much better place if we were all more like Elendil. And then, of course, the situation plays out a little bit more later on in the episode, and we have his daughter who is torn between what she thinks is right, which clearly isn't, and then her father and her father's life. And then we have the situation with Muriel, and they keep flirting with this idea, that there's some romantic tension between the two, which I think is good. I don't know that that actually is found in the lore anywhere specifically, but I think it works for these characters, and it also works for Muriel taking his place and being the one who is thrown into the sea in order to be judged. And I love the line about how the sea is never wrong. What that means is that Ulmo is never wrong. Ulmo is there looking out for everyone and is ultimately communicating with them and in control. And that is a theme that happens throughout the Silmarillion. We've talked a lot about that in the previous episodes. It happens with Tur and Gondolin and all of that stuff. It's very reminiscent of all of that. And the sea creature looks really cool and weird. I'm down for all of that stuff. I think that was really cool. And the one thing that I think is being set up here is that Muriel is like, okay, well, the Valar are for her. And we are getting the antithesis of the thing that happens a lot of times when you're at the climax of a story where it's like, oh, it seems so terrible. How are the good guys going to pull it out? There's no way they'll be able to figure this out. And then, of course, there's a way they figure it out. I think we're getting the opposite of that, of the, oh, good. Now she's the queen again. The people respect her. The Valar clearly have spoken. No, it's not going to go that well. This is it's a relief moment, but nope, it's not a relief moment because things are going to get worse from here. And that's kind of a fun roller coaster to be on, to be honest. I think it's also going to create some motivation for Elendil and the return to Middle Earth and all of that sort of thing. So I think that's where we're going with that storyline. I don't think our Farazan is done, and clearly he's still using the Palantir and getting visions of far off things that are freaking him out. And I have to wonder if Sauron is in control of that. One of the reasons why that works in, say, the Peter Jackson movies is because Sauron has one of the Palantir and he's influencing and controlling those who pick up or interact with other Palantir. It doesn't seem that that's the case here, at least as far as I've seen. It's not like he's got one in his pocket. So the Palantir themselves are not evil. They just allow you to see at distance or allow you to communicate from one to another. So I'm not sure exactly where they're going with that, but I think that's the general sense, is that he's seeing things that are scaring him out of context, and it will be making decisions that are bad decisions due to fear. I think that's where that's going. But we're already 25 minutes into this episode, and I still have to go thank our patrons, so I'm going to go do that, and then I will be back to talk about Gandalf. We have to talk about Gandalf, guys. All right, don't go anywhere. Be right back.
Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.
All right, we're here in the middle of the show, and I couldn't do this without all of you and all of the patrons and everybody who helps support me and makes this possible. Thank you for being here, and welcome to our newest patrons, Luke, Joshua M., Pihok A, I think that's how you pronounce that, and Gabe Sandstorm. Words are hard. Thank you for joining up. Patreon.com/LOTRLorecast is where you can go do that. You can sign up for free to just be in the know and get notifications and things that go out, you know, to stay in the know and stuff. Or you can get bonus episodes, a bonus episode for every major episode that has come out, which means you have hundreds of bonus episodes that exist where we go beyond just the regular episodes into deeper stuff and discussions and things like that. So lots of great stuff to get on the Patreon. Also, we have to shout out all of our VIP patrons. Here we go. Let's knock it out. AK Music Lover, Apollo, Aragorn III, Atle Morton, Austin C, Azzle Razzle, Barney D, Bo, Brandy D, Cutter Metalworks, Daniel Nightweaver, David S, David M, Divine Madman, Fulcrum, Gerald CFC, Gimli A Break, Greg at Mordor's Carpentry, J Dub, Gemma D, Jezzer, Katie S, Capenna, Lori B, Mason Weathertop, Nick K, Nostrils of Sauron, Richard J, Rivqua, Rosie Rose, Sam B, Saruman the Stinky, TJT, and Tour Son of Hoor. Thank you so much to all of you. You're all wonderful, amazing people. Another way to help the show is to leave a quick little review like this, a little 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. I'll read it on a future episode. This one comes from Nick Dietzler, 88, in Canada, who writes, "Great listen, highly recommend to any fantasy fan. I've only been listening for a couple days, but I plan on listening to the entirety of the podcast." Well, thank you for taking the time to leave that 5-star review. All of that is super helpful. You can also rate the show on Spotify or whatever other platform you listen to this on. And thanks for being here. All right, let's continue with the rest of what's going on in episode 6 of season 2. Here we go. It's Bombadil time. We get some more Tom Bombadil, who also is spectacular. I love the way the actor plays him. This aloofness, this feeling of just kind of being a little disconnected, but yet still caring about the world. I think it all tracks pretty well. You also have the scene here where they are talking. He's talking with the stranger, and the stranger is trying to understand the secret fire. This is a topic that comes up in Tolkien and is never truly explained very clearly. And I'm going to go into this a little bit, but the situation here, just the fact that he brings up the secret fire, that is a quote from Gandalf. We hear it in the Peter Jackson movie when he's on the bridge with the Balrog and he says, "I'm the wielder of the hidden flame, the secret fire." Like, he goes into that whole dialogue. My understanding of that was, by that point in the Third Age, he has Círdan's ring. Círdan's ring has some power over flame, over fire. It's part of why Gandalf can light pine cones on fire in The Hobbit when they're hiding up in the trees from the goblins. It was always my understanding that secret fire in that reference was about the ring, but this stranger here doesn't have the ring. In fact, he doesn't even know the rings really exist. He's not even part of that storyline. So the other interpretation of the secret fire is a reference to Eru Iluvatar, the god of everything, and this idea that the reason why Eru Iluvatar could create and make things is because he was imbued with this secret fire, this flame that's kind of can create the souls of creatures and things like that. It's the thing that Iluvatar has that Morgoth doesn't. And or Melkor at that point doesn't. He gets a new name once he starts lording over Middle Earth. But this goes all the way back to the beginning of time and that sort of thing. If that's the interpretation they're going with here, which seems to be the case, which also makes Gandalf way more interesting if you think about it. Gandalf being imbued with some semblance of the power of Iluvatar himself. That seems really cool. I'm not sure how they're actually going to work that in or make it make sense. I think it's going to have something to do with him finding the power inside himself because he is a child of Iluvatar, just like any of the Valar or the Maiar, or more specifically, the children of Iluvatar is usually a reference to the elves and the men. he comes from Iluvatar. Iluvatar imbues his creation with this secret fire, this hidden flame, and he's going to find out how to manipulate that and use it for good, for magic. And in my mind, if they do it correctly, it will be less of that's how he can cast magic spells and more of that's why he understands who he is and what he needs to do. And that's what empowers him. And I go into more detail on this on the bonus episode this week. So that'll be up on Sunday. And if you would like access to that, that's on the Patreon, patreon.com/LOTRLorecast. And there's a ton of them. There's over 100 different bonus episodes. And this week we'll explore a little bit more about what that might actually mean in greater detail. So if you want an extended discussion on that, that is available for you. The conversation here then goes to the finding of his staff, which has been kind of the theme for him this season. And he's given this dilemma by Tom Bombadil. Either go find your staff among all of these hundreds of trees, or go save your friends. But you can only do one. One is siding with your friends. The other is your destiny. And I think we're getting a flip on that, or at least this is going to be flipped. It seems like Tom Bombadil is saying you need to go find your staff because you need to find power for yourself in order to fight back the enemies and the villains. But as I've been discussing already, finding power for yourself is the wrong thing to do. Actually helping your friends and doing what's better for the greater good is the right thing to do, and the thing that will ultimately give you more power than you would have gotten if you just did things selfishly. So it's a test. Tom Bombadil knows this, and the stranger has to make that decision. I think this is probably the same kind of decision that the Blue Wizard had to make and failed, which is why he's now this terrible evil figure. The stranger in this situation, Gandalf, because clearly that's a reference. Like, this is the fifth or sixth time we've gotten a reference that's like, no, this is Gandalf. I'm just going to call him Gandalf from now on. Gandalf is going to side with his friends. He's going to side with saving the Harfoots or the Harfeet. I'm still not 100% sure about that one. And, in doing that, we'll discover the power in himself, and then the use of a staff will simply help him focus the power. The power will not come from external sources and through selfish means. It will come through doing the right thing and standing for life and the safety of others and those kinds of good qualities. So I think that's where we're seeing this situation go. And I still love Tom Bombadil. The acting is great. Then we have the dwarves and the situation with Sauron showing up with the dwarves. Sauron actually being in Khazad Dûm in Moria is kind of a cool concept to think about. Now, he gets turned down because Durin the Elder is like, oh, he's going to come back and we'll get an even better deal on this mithril because they're going to need it for war. But that's not the thing that I find most interesting about this situation. There's two things. First of all, later on, we see that Sauron gets the mithril anyway. Does that mean that he went back and negotiated with the king for more? I think we're going to get fill-ins for how he comes across that mithril in the next episode. The second thing, though, is Sauron having his presence actually in the place is going to be felt by the nameless things deep in the earth, or the Balrog. In the previous episode, in episode 5, Disa stumbles into this sideway area. I know that people online have complained about this. They're like, 2 feet away from a popular market area is a hidden part of the caves that they've never been in before. I think the sense is that that thing rolls a long distance and she ends up way down in one of these side passages that nobody really uses. They know it's there, but nobody really uses it, and walks for, who knows, a few hundred feet far enough away from the rest of the group. And then she's also a stone singer. She can hear and feel things in the rocks that others can't. And she gets the sense that there's something down there. Now, the thing that's down there that I think she's sensing, I don't think it's the Balrog. I think it's the nameless things under the earth, or it's the Watcher in the Waters or something like that. And it's still hinting at the fact that this is a dangerous place. But the fact that we have the ring on the dwarven finger and it's corrupting him, and then Sauron showing up also makes me think about a few things. First of all, Sauron's evil presence will be felt by the things in there, and it's going to stir them to action sooner. Secondly, he's realizing that even though this dwarven king has a ring, he can't always get what he wants from him by simply negotiating. He wants more control over that ring. This is going to lead to the concept, which he has not revealed yet, of making the One Ring. Now, whether that's something that was already in his mind from the beginning, or it's something that he's realizing will be useful now that all of these other rings are being made in order to control all of them more firmly, I guess we're going to have to see how they play that out. It could go either direction, and I think I'm probably fine with that, because at some point he comes up with the idea. Whether he comes up with it sooner or later doesn't really matter too much to me. All right, so I've gone kind of out of order, but there's one more thing to talk about, and it's the whole scene at the end where Adar and Galadriel are talking again, and Galadriel realizes that Adar is being manipulated. And I think that this is a wonderful thing to happen on the show, because it shows that Galadriel is generally more aware of what's going on than a lot of the other characters and has pieced it together. She's spent enough time now studying Sauron to understand a bit about the way he thinks and what he's planning to do. And she's one of the first people who truly gets a sense of this. And I think that really plays into her character well. It also grows her up a little bit. It also connects her a little bit more to the Galadriel that we see in the Third Age, in the Lord of the Rings. Somebody who is wise, but has earned that wisdom. She's been in these situations and she understands. She's walked among the orcs. She's stood up against Sauron directly. Sauron has gotten in her head and she knows what that's like. And maybe this is me speaking on personal terms of having been in and around, and not just a boss, but other important people in my life have been narcissists. And when you've been in those kinds of situations and feeling mentally and emotionally manipulated, you start to notice all the patterns and how that works. And so you start to be able to predict what they will do in a specific situation. That's what's happening here, I think, is Galadriel is really coming to an understanding of who Sauron really is and how he operates. And it will be one of the things that leads toward, well, the Fellowship and the things that happen later on in the Third Age when they have to fight against Sauron again. She and Elrond will be the two people, and Gandalf, who really understand him as a villain and what he's capable of, and not that he's just some terrible big bad guy. That's not why Sauron is scary. It's not because he's a big, terrible bad guy. He is not Morgoth. He is Sauron. And Sauron is scary because of his ability to manipulate and get in people's heads and to plan and control. That's who he is. And we're getting a glimpse of that, which I think is wonderful. So there you go. Those are my thoughts on this episode. If I missed anything, if there's anything else that you think is super important, needs to be pointed out, I'd love to have your feedback. Comment on the Patreon episode, if you're on Patreon, or join us on the Discord, on the Robots Radio Discord. And thanks for being here. I really do appreciate you. And I will see you next week. We've got two more episodes left, and then I'll get back to The Hobbit. I promise. It's coming. But we got to get through this show because it's too fun. It's too exciting. And how are they going to play out the big battles at the end? I'm so excited for that as well. All right. I gotta let you go. All right. I'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.
Hey there, this is Tom from the future. I'm whispering because time travel requires whispering. I don't know if you've listened to the newest episodes in order to find this out, but with the holidays here, there is a brand new thing that Patreon is doing where you can gift subs, which is really cool because that means a few different things. First of all, if you know somebody else who enjoys this show, you can get them a sub to whatever tier you want for whatever amount of time. So if you look at certain rewards and you think it would be really cool to get them those rewards, or just being part of the community, or even just getting ad-free episodes, that's something you can give this holiday season. Also, it means that if you've been wanting to sign up for the Patreon and you haven't been able to, and you want to ask for it as a gift from somebody else, then that can work as well. So, both of those things are options. All that you have to do is go to Patreon, log in, or create an account. You can just create a free account. You don't have to sign up with anybody, anyone's Patreon. And then you go to the Patreon page for this show, and you choose to gift a thing. You go through all the little options, and you send them a gift. It's really simple. It would be super helpful to us, and it's a fun thing to give. So hope you consider that, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday. All right, let's get back to the show.